Okay. All right, good morning. Everyone ready? Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is the Finance and Citywide Projects Committee meeting. We've got a couple requests to hear some things out of order, and we've got a couple of items withdrawn. Item number 29 has been withdrawn. I think it says. Anything else to be withdrawn or deferred?
I had a request, Mr. Chair, to defer an item. I'm just looking for it. I can't put it.
Okay.
Remember where it is on the agenda. On number 12,
yes,
which is the renewal with the franchise waste contractors, one of the representatives contacted me that they wanted to meet and they're out of the state. If we could defer this to give them time to meet with us.
Any objections? Jay, that's the renewal of the agreement for the franchise waste contractors.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I had not heard that. I knew one of the companies could not be here. The other company is here. We have had some preliminary discussions with these companies. They are interested in renewing the franchise agreement. I think they probably wanted to be here if there was any objection to the renewal, or if we got into a real heated discussion with regards to the terms or the sheet set for the services. So I'll defer to the committee what you want to do, but if the general direction here is that we're going to go ahead and renew it, I'm sure they'll be more than happy to move, continue in a direction, because this contract will expire come the end of September.
End of September.
Okay, perfect.
We can continue?
Defer it, yeah.
Because I think this item, as I understood it, is we're looking to get more public benefits from them, and they have some ideas that they say they want to bring and meet with us separately to present to us before discussing it at a public meeting. So I think they understand what the city is looking for, but they just wanted to do it before the Finance Committee meeting.
Okay.
Do you have me off, Mickey? Ricky?
Yeah, sorry, I apologize.
Okay. Then would it be our general direction then that we are going to go ahead and renew that franchise agreement?
Do we have another finance meeting in July?
Yeah, we do. Jay, you have that concerned look in your face, so don't let us push you into a place.
There's two components, and the city attorney can chime in. There's a franchise agreement, which we would look to renew, and then there's a services agreement, which would spell out the different provisions, benefits, and things like that. We don't want to get too far down the road. If it is this committee's recommendation to go ahead and renew those contracts, then I'd love to hear that so we can continue and then really have both vendors appear with whatever public benefits that they may want to proffer.
I'll tell you, before I were to make a recommendation on something like this, I'd want to hear about it. So I'd want a presentation. So
okay.
I'm not going to say that I'm inclined to renew or not until it's been presented. So someone asked you to defer it?
Right. I mean, I want to defer it. Obviously, just to give it a brief history, right now we have two companies. We've had as many as five. What happens ever since before I served on the commission till now, the big ones buy up the little ones, so we go down in the amount of companies that we have to provide these services. And there's good things and bad things about having less and more.
Right.
But if we're going to have less, I think they need to present more public benefits in exchange for having less competition. And they get that, and they know that, and they want to present some ideas to us that I think will make their contract better for Miami Beach, which is why I think deferring it to hear what their ideas are is a good thing.
Okay, thank you.
Is that okay, Jay? Does that jam you up? So then we'll just hear this in July?
No, I mean, worst case scenario, we can extend the existing contract until a new one gets signed.
Yeah, we're definitely extending it. We're not terminating it, but we're extending it, I guess, month to month.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, let's hear item number eight. Our colleague from the north is here, I think, to present a discussion regarding a Celebrity Beach soccer match benefiting Best Buddies regarding city permitting and fees.
Good morning, Commissioners. Is this on? All right.
And then we'll do item number two on how we're going to take over the North.
It's like Game of Thrones. So this item is about the Best Buddies celebrity soccer tournament happening here in Miami Beach. The request from the organization, requested a VCA grant of $30,000 and seeking a $50,000 city sponsorship. North Bay Village is contributing $10,000 as of now. Is the budget kind of the same? Then?
Yeah, Yes, and obviously we can be able to change that, but I know that based upon the requirements of how the event happened last year and just some, you know, additional things that they're requesting of the residents and what they wanted to have, and we're also looking at this as a way to have an annual sporting event where you're also having inclusion regarding the buddies participate in it, and we're also making it free to all of the residents who attend for general admission. So we're just changing it a little bit, but because of those changes, we also had to be able to incur a little of additional costs associated with that. So hoping because now we're making it free for general admission for the residents that we can be able to help cover those costs through that.
And so obviously this is an amazing event with amazing outcome with Best Buddies. The administration, after looking through it, it looks like there's a fairly strong sponsorship contingent to this event, seeking sponsorships. If only all events could come with strong sponsorships. So they're currently speaking to the VCA, and I spoke to the VCA this week, who is in the process of securing a potential $30,000 grant for this event. And so the administration is recommending waiving all their permit fees and having them continue to go through the VCA process for a $30,000 grant and not a $50,000 sponsorship.
When is this going before the VCA?
October, I think, is the final yes. Award. They take July and August, September, going through the adjudication of it, and will award final grants in October.
And then with the event being in November, it does cut it a little bit close, especially with all the additional costs that will have to be secured until that point.
Well, I put this on because I went to the event last year.
Yes.
And you do an amazing job, and I think Best Buddies is a great organization. So I commend you on your work in supporting Best Buddies all these years. So, yes, I will make the motion to do the waiver and go through the VCA process, perhaps with an expression from this body that we'd like them to support you. And if something goes wrong, VCA, call me back.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I may. I'm also supportive. I think this is a wonderful event, and I think I heard a key word, and that word was free for residents.
Yes.
So let's make sure that we really get the message out from a communication standpoint. We're putting money forward here in a good, positive way, but our residents should really have the opportunity. So I would like to just dial up the communications. Hopefully it's a huge community turnout, and I will second the motion.
Thank you.
I did want to actually hear number two because we keep deferring it. Can you stick around? Just to at least get a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do number 11 because somebody asked to hear that first. And then we'll do two and three just because we keep deferring it, at least mm-hmm. have a discussion on it. And you're here. Okay. Item 11 was discussion regarding the initial funding for undergrounding of utilities in the city of Miami Beach.
Chairman Areola, Commissioners, Mr. City Attorney. For the record, I'm Roy Coley, Director of Public Works. The item before you is one component of the undergrounding process requires us to have an exact quote from FP&L before we can go to a binding referendum in any community. What this item does is sets up a way for the city to initially pay for that binding quote from FPL. They will give us a ballpark estimate for our preliminary discussions with the community, but they will not give us a binding cost estimate without some engineering fees. So what this simply does is allows the city to pay for that upon city commission approval, and I think our CFO has recommended that to come from contingency funding on a case-by-case basis.
And how much is it?
Generally speaking, it's anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 per neighborhood, depending on the overall size and scope of work.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I sponsored this. You all know that I've been following very closely and trying to grease the skids, if you will, for the North Bay Road neighbors who, as we all know, really would like to underground their utilities as part of their neighborhood infrastructure projects. And we help them with their petition. This is really the next step. So the idea is to really assist the residents with this step, which is a little bit tricky. It's inconsistent from neighborhood to neighborhood how robust the homeowners association is, how much membership is really active in that homeowners association. And when a homeowners association is responsible for this payment, which is a critical path step, they have to go secure this $11,000 from their neighbors. So can you imagine that you're the HOA president and you've got to run around chasing all your neighbors, keeping track of how to dollar up to make this $11,000? To me, it's just a very resident-friendly thing to do, to set up this, you know, this grant fund. We'll pay for it. If it proceeds, we'll get paid back. And so to the extent that these projects do go forward, you know, it is self-funding. We're really just advancing the number to the neighborhood. So I do hope you'll support it. One change in the memo that I talked to Mr. Woodruff about yesterday is really just about creating a little bit more bureaucracy than I think is necessary. Of course, it, you know, I defer to the committee and your recommendation. But if you look on page 39, where it says the administration's recommendation is to avoid a separate line item and instead have the proposed funding source be general fund contingencies with each expense approved by the city commission. I would say that, you know, up to a certain number per year, the city manager could provide that approval and only over a threshold should it need to come back to the commission.
Yep, that's fine.
Let me just ask a question. What amount were you thinking?
Well, for the total fund, I was saying 100,000, but it was arbitrary. That would be 10 neighborhoods. I don't think that we, or 9 neighborhoods, I don't think that we would ever get there within 1 year.
No, I don't think so.
Really, it probably would be very unlikely that it would be more than 2.
Right. I agree.
So if you wanted to lower the number, I don't think that really changes it.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Yeah, I'm very supportive of this. Undergrounding is good for the community. I think it fits into the umbrella of resiliency. Frankly, I wish we could be doing more. It's good in terms of the aesthetics. So in a word, I think this is excellent. It's small sort of seed funding, so I would support that. I would support increasing the threshold and limiting the bureaucracy as well.
Second.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, come on up, please.
Commissioners, thank you. My name is Myra Diaz Baracavoli, and I am a homeowner on Alton Road. Alton Road and its residents, and David Sullivan here, one of our neighbors, we've been trying to do undergrounding prior to 2000. And we have meeting notes with FDOT where we've been trying to do this before street rising was even an issue. But that being the case, we are scheduled, supposedly as of today, to have FDOT redo our street in 2023. That being the case, FDOT would be opening the street and closing it, which reduces the cost of undergrounding for Alton Road, which is your main arterial, main evacuation road, and your only road in the city of Miami Beach with a hospital. So in that respect, we've met with FPL, and we are now waiting for city staff to even do a further meeting with FPL. The gentleman that handles undergrounding for FPL is stationed in Juneau Beach, and he's willing to come down and meet with us, and so we're waiting on that meeting. But the thing we need to meet about is where do we put these transformers, because they can't go on the swale, they can't go on the median because of hazardous conditions in case of an accident. So we do have a proposal for them, for FPL, and we'd like to move forward because it obviously would be the time to do it when the street is redone. We have some other issues that we met with FDOT on, and any support that you can give us would be very helpful. We do have a preliminary estimate from FPL, which is quite lower than what it's cost in other neighborhoods, simply because FDOT is going to take care of some of the costs as part of their project. So thank you.
Mr. Chair,
thank you.
I wanted to, and Myra, maybe you can confirm or comment on this aspect as well. One of the benefits of undergrounding on Alton Road is that all down Alton Road we have these up to, you know, 80, 90-year-old fully mature mahogany trees. You know them because they have been given a haircut for the last however many years, a V-cut, and so they're not really allowed to develop into a full shade canopy. What we understand, I think, is that if the Alton Road utilities, overhead utilities, are not undergrounded, and that is a state road, and the city does not own those swales or have the responsibility of those swales, that FDOT will not plant back mahoganies. They intend to plant back smaller ornamental type trees that would not grow to a mature height that would interfere with the overhead utilities. And I think just from an emotional, cultural, human standpoint, that's going to be very, very upsetting to our community to take out this mature, these beautiful old humongous mahoganies and replace them with small ornamental trees. I don't think our community is going to swallow that very well. So because the project is not until 2023, if we're very organized and deliberate about this, and we do underground those utilities, it's not just the benefit, which Myra Bedekovoli accurately states about evacuation routes and so forth, and the aesthetics, is also the shade canopy. And being able to reestablish Alton Road after the project the way it has always been, with large mahogany shade trees. And I think we can save a lot of future heartache if we do the right thing now.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I think there were some folks here for item number 14. I think we might be able to go through that quickly. Discussion regarding a bioswale pilot project for 59th Street, west of Alton Road.
Oh, come on up. We'll go together.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Commissioners. This item is the duplicate companion item that we carried to SRC as a recommendation for a bioswale project at 59th Street and Alton, which also includes a public right-of-way that goes from North Bay Road to the water's edge. The item first came about after the LaGorse project was delayed, and these gentlemen to my right are property owners at 59th and Alton who came to the commission with concerns about regular flooding there. And so what we've done is we've met with them, and we've looked at installing bioswales adjacent to their property and their neighbors. And we've identified for them what the benefits are and the limitations of this bioswale. Due to the elevation of the property, the bioswales would be capable of managing 1.5 inches of rainfall for them. That would do a tremendous amount of pollution control, but it hydraulically is limited. It will eliminate nuisance flooding and the puddling from every little rain that comes by, but when we do have very serious extreme rain events, this bioswale will not prevent flooding. It will long-term help with pollution control, and that's its number one benefit from my viewpoint. The second benefit is it's a pilot. There's three different types of design within this project, and that would allow the city to study those long-term to determine which one of those is most efficient and desirable for future projects throughout the city. We have the project designed by one of our consulted engineers, and they have estimated this to be a cost of $850,000. The picture you see there shows all greenway, but after we received this from our consultants, our staff green space manager, Rodney Knowles, identified a list of trees that would flourish in this area based on the soil conditions and location to water. We've also shared those species with the homeowners here, and we'll let them speak to them that they could actually choose some of the palette of what plants go there. What we're here for today from you is to seek authorization on authorizing financing of $850,000 for the project, and I'll let them speak to it, anything that they think I left out.
Well, I'd like to bring up the point that this is not just about a 5,900
just too,
but also as
the record. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
The record, yeah.
As we also know, I've been to multiple meetings here, and we've all heard the frustrations of residents in Lakeview neighborhoods, and they don't want their street raised. So I'm thinking maybe this is a viable alternative for them and other neighborhoods that don't want their street raised. So this is a test case, so they can visit our neighborhood and see if it's working for us. And so this is a much cheaper alternative for them, and for other neighborhoods going forward. We know this is not a permanent fix, but if it helps, it helps. And maybe it will help them as well, too. You know, if you know, we have all these people that are saying, let's you know, fix or alleviate the flooding. Let's give it a try. You know, I know some people might say, you know, let's scale it back. You know, let's do nothing at all. But if we do nothing or scale it back, nothing's going to happen. So we have to move forward and do something. You know, it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse.
This area floods?
Constantly. My driveway is flooded right now from the rain last night.
That was a rhetorical question.
It goes, yeah. It goes nowhere.
The point is, you were probably part of a lot of those meetings we had a year and a half ago before we did the pause, which uh-huh. was a lot of your neighbors were protesting and saying
the street doesn't flood. My house
right?
doesn't flood.
So, right. I mean, that's just not factual.
It's not factual. No. 59th Street floods constantly.
And so the issue we have here is because of the pause, we still mm-hmm. have homeowners like you who are desperate, and we now have to spend potentially money to test things,
right.
whereas we have a remedy that we know does work. There's
right.
some side effects that we're dealing with, but it does work. And so we're going to be spending $850,000 on a street end. It'll improve. It'll help. But mm-hmm. it's not the long-term solution. So it's like it's a Band-Aid. And that's the cost of the pause, in my opinion.
Right. And I don't see the streets being raised because all of my residents – They don't want their streets raised. Either they don't want their street raised, or they don't want the inconvenience of having any work done because they've lived there for 50 years.
That's the real issue because
right.
I know many of your neighbors,
right.
and you know they've been in those homes for 30, 40
right.
years.
I don't want the inconvenience. You know, I don't want the dust. I've lived there for 50 years, and I don't want to deal with it.
They're going to outlive the floods.
Right. I'll be dead in 20 years, so I don't want the hassle.
That's exactly the issue.
You know,
100%.
It's like I didn't want to pay for the increase in school taxes because my kids are out of school.
I say that because they've told me that personally
right.
in private. And it's
I was in the meeting the other
day. It's immoral because they're punting right. this issue to the next generation.
It's not my problem. That's all I hear. It's not my problem.
Ricky, you haven't lost your legal skills in making a record.
Right.
A couple of things. 2 points.
Right.
Number one, I really wasn't too sure what a bioswale was. I Googled it last night.
mm-hmm.
And from what I read online, bioswales are used more often for contaminants to remove the contaminants from the water
mm-hmm.
than I think what you guys really need help with, which was the flooding. And I've been to your house. I
yeah.
know it floods.
Right.
I know how bad it is. And we're going to support this because we want to help you. But I agree. It is very expensive, and it's a Band-Aid. It's not the solution that we need.
Right.
So on your level, on the kind of micro level, yes, we want to help you, and yes, we're going to support this to help the neighborhood. Kind of on the bigger level, though, we've talked a lot about the pause, both on the dais, I see comments on Facebook, and really that vote was over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know what's going on? Because is this...
January 2018,
a year and a half ago. So it's been almost a year and a half. I think, you know, maybe not today, but I think this body needs to send a message to the administration that we want to know what's going on. Maybe this is floating through some other committee that I am not following as closely. But a year and a half to wait to redo this RFP is way too long. So I happen to agree that if there was a pause a year and a half ago, whether it was agreed upon by everybody on this body or not, I think we're unified that the pause is over. We need to know what's going on and make sure that process
yeah.
is moving forward.
Mr. Chair, if I could. First off, I like this concept, and I know we want to get into the benefits. It was recommended by ULI, the green and blue infrastructure. I think we want to have a little more discussion around the alternatives and the cost. It is a big number, but we want to help. I do want to comment on a couple things, though. First, this concept of that all the residents that don't want their roads raised is because of their sort of life cycle or time, I don't think that's accurate. I think there are residents that have legitimate concerns about the impact on private property. They've seen some other projects, and they want to feel more comfortable, and they think there are other approaches. Do I think there's a segment of the population that would rather just sort of see it go away and maybe they don't experience it? Sure, I'm sure there's some. But I don't want to dismiss there's a segment of people that have very legitimate concerns. And if I'm hearing your testimony right, you think most of your neighbors don't want their roads raised.
Not to interrupt you, but I'm only speaking from my residents
right.
on my street that I've spoken to
That's
personally.
That's right. But you were saying most of them don't want their streets
well,
raised.
in my neighborhood.
In
I'm not speaking for the city in general.
No, no, no. I understand.
I'm speaking from 59th Street to 63rd.
Yeah. The second thing is this term pause has been bantied about a little bit. I've never used it in my life. We have almost an $80 million project on West Avenue. We have work going on Indian Creek. We're about to get going down on First. We're active in Palm Hibiscus. I see activity in Venetian Way. So can we do more and should we? We're absolutely working towards that. But the idea that there's nothing happening in the city and that we're not doing anything does not seem to be fully accurate.
Well, okay, we can have that debate. It is accurate. You ran you ran on a platform of the pause.
I didn't. Not you.
I didn't. So, you know, I'm shocked you say you've never used the word pause, but yeah. Whatever. And when you say they don't want their roads raised, they generally don't want any construction on the street either, right? They don't want, it's not just the road raising, so they don't want construction. They don't, I know your neighbors.
My house does not flood. I can give you specific names and specific addresses.
Yeah. It's not the street raising per se, it's any construction. Just leave me alone.
But leave me alone. I will
outlive this. Flood.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I may, because if we want to talk a little bit about campaigns and what people said, let me be clear, because I think I would be able to represent it. I absolutely ran on the platform that sea level rise is a scientific fact, that I support our efforts to address it, and that we got to get it right. And for me, getting it right includes outside perspectives. I'm delighted to have sponsored the Urban Land Institute. I think their recommendations on blue and green, which this item, which I'm sure we'll get to in just a second here, is exactly in line with. I'm delighted that we have Jacobs Engineering. I am very pleased that our residents are getting a voice, and I'm pleased that we are implementing projects, the five or six I listed, while we try and improve. So I never would say, I wouldn't use a term like pause to describe that. I would call it incremental adaptation, and we're making it better as we go.
Mr. Chair, can I come in? Thank you all, and listen, the more we talk about this, no matter what, the better, right? Because it is our most important challenge to sort of posture this item that's in front of the committee today with this bioswale pilot. To me, the reason that I sponsored it is because it is looking to get it right. I mean, this is new. We haven't embraced bioswales to date in Miami Beach. It is absolutely one of the recommendations of the Urban Land Institute. They said, we like the gray infrastructure that you're doing, but from a human impact standpoint, if you adopt also complementary green and blue infrastructure, then it will be more palatable for the community because, first of all, it's more beautiful. We're talking about landscaping and trees. That's what the green is, and water for the blue. But also because our community is very, very concerned, exactly what you talked about, Commissioner Gongora, the contaminants. The community is very concerned about the quality of the stormwater that's discharged into the bay. And as our public works folks will tell us, that first inch and a half, which this system would collect, is the most polluted because it's the first rains that pick up all the oils and fertilizers and all the nasty things that have collected during the dry times onto the surface, whether it's the surface of the road or the surface of our yards, and, you know, lifts that up. So the bioswale will collect that. So I think that there's so many benefits to this in terms of getting it right. For one, we'll be able to study and measure and report on the efficacy of these three different typologies of bioswale in terms of picking up those contaminants and not putting them directly into the bay, which I think we all want to do that. Secondly, in addition to sort of the technical performance, our residents will be able to go and look at this. I mean, I could see us putting up like a little plaque or marker and talking about this so that residents can drive over and look at it. And, you know, part of the problem of the projects has been once we get in there on these initial projects and have broken ground and are starting to put things back together, people's expectations have been missed. And that causes upset. In this case, we can set the expectations right from the start by giving something for them to go look at. I think that will help a lot in terms of resident buy-in with the blue and the green infrastructure. And it will help us. You know, once Jacobs, by the end of the year, finishes their work on the new timeline and on the different design criteria that we asked them to study, we'll also have hopefully some, you know, results from this. The next step will be putting together design criteria packages for specific projects. And if a project calls for a bioswale, wouldn't it be nice if we had, you know, sort of looked at and measured both from a public works standpoint and from a community standpoint, which ones of these we like and work better. I think it's a good thing to do. I was very disappointed that the number was so high. I really wanted it to be less. However, in spite of that, you know, we do remember that in 2017, GAP changed, and now we can use stormwater fees for blue and green infrastructure. That wasn't true before 2017. Now we can. So I think we ought to be able to find the funding for this, and I hope we do.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Again, I support this. I like it. It is new. It is different. And you're right, Commissioner. This came from the Urban Land Institute. My question's really a little bit practical around the number, right? It's a big number. Are there opportunities to achieve what we want to do for this neighborhood in a different way, a little more cost efficient? Is there a way to slice it? And then second, to Commissioner Gongora's point, we know we're going to go do work in this neighborhood. It needs some level of work. We'll probably have a spirited discussion about the type and the timing, but we know we're doing something. I'm a little concerned that we are going to spend money and then rework. Could you talk about the cost, value engineering opportunities, and rework?
Commissioner, there's always opportunities for value engineering. What you have before you is multiple designs of different technologies. And if you wanted to go with the lowest cost version, we could go back to the designer and say, of all these different types, some that include concrete, some that include mechanical soils, and if you want the cheapest option, we could ask them, just provide us the cheapest option, and we wouldn't have to do them all. That would be the easiest path to a lower cost. Then we would have one particular design that would be installed. We wouldn't have the multiples. The area between North Bay Road and the water, which the city has a 25-foot right-of-way there and an additional 25-foot easement, that in the right-of-way we intended to install one of these sections. That section would most likely remain untouched into the future, so future project would not go through there and replace it. This area here might be impacted, and some percentage of this bioswale would be redesigned and rebuilt along the way. I would like to sort of frame it that that's several years away. To summarize where I think we are to Commissioner Gongora's question, when the LaGorse project was canceled, that solicitation was canceled, those designs are canceled, they don't exist. And then the subsequent meeting that we had when the Lakeview folks showed up and they wanted to be next, and then after that Orchard Park folks showed up and they wanted to be next, that was when the commission authorized us to get on this path that we ultimately ended with Jacobs to come back and advise us who should be next at what size and under what design criteria. So I anticipate by the end of this year having that information before you, and then if you approve that and you settle on it, then whichever neighborhood is at the top of that list, and I don't know which neighborhood that might be at this point, then they would go into design for work that wouldn't take place for a couple of years. So if this neighborhood isn't the very top of the list, we are years out from doing work there.
Yeah, so I want to correct the record, because to say that we are doing things, we're not. There's no construction going on right now as part of our resiliency program other than some minor things and things being planned. We were ready beginning of 2018. We had awarded contracts to go into Upper North Bay Road. We canceled all of that to do the Jacob study and to all this stuff. We will, as you just said, at the end of this year conclude those studies and discussions and recommendations and then begin the queuing process and then begin the bidding process. So at the end of this year, we'll have had the second anniversary of the pause. By the time we get back into the whole rhythm of identifying neighborhoods, going through the bidding process, selecting the winning bids is a couple years down the road. So this pause will be 4 or 5 years in the making. And we were ready last year to go.
And we're flooding.
And we're flooding.
Okay. Bruce and Kurt, you guys are being highlighted for differences of opinion on something that has nothing to do with your bioswale, which we're all going to support. I want to get the best bioswale. If we can get it less money, of course we want it for less money. This is a big price ticket item, but we want to make sure we do the best for the neighborhood. I think we need to leave the talk of the pause in the past. This item was left behind because of some flaws in the RFP, not because this body doesn't want to move forward with the project, and we are moving forward with the project. And I think it's important that perhaps in the July commission meeting we get a report as to where we're at so that we don't continue to talk about pauses or non-pauses and we're all on the same page of moving this forward together. But for today's purposes, I'll move this item forward and ask that administration work to perhaps bring the cost down without lessening the quality of the project because it is a big price ticket. But that we do move forward and do this because I know this is a critical point in the neighborhood that needs this.
I'll second that.
Commissioner Malakoff had something she wanted to add.
This is my neighborhood. I was not happy with the pause. I thought I see flooding on Upper North Bay Road every time there's a heavy rain or every time there's a high tide. That's my two cents. Okay, the bioswale. The bioswale, I think, is wonderful to do. I think we should do just what you're proposing, which is trying out the different types. However, the neighborhood was promised a 25-foot pedestrian pathway so that people who live in the neighborhood can finally enjoy walking there and looking at the bay and the sunset. Right now, there are so many houses chock-a-block with walls and fences and landscape that there's no way on all the street ends to get to actually see the bay. So unless you have one of the homes on the bay, there's no vision for the rest of the neighborhood to enjoy it. And that was promised as part of this city and private owner agreement that 25 feet. So I just hope that when the bioswale is done, pedestrians who live in the neighborhood will be able to walk. And I just want to make sure that that's true.
Part of it.
Mr. Chair, just to add some color to this discussion, the property owner back in the day was Pablo Escobar, and he put a fence around the city's property, and I don't think anyone wanted to tell him he had to move it. So that's how that access got obstructed.
Okay. All right. John, do we have the money for this?
I've talked to Roy about it, and we would have to use stormwater bond funds. And
thank you, Barry.
It's doable.
Stormwater bond funds. And so this would be a Band-Aid for a period of time, but since it's going to be very difficult to get to any construction done in the Upper North Bay Road for many years, this project would last for how long, do we think? 5-6 years?
Well, a portion of it could last into perpetuity. There will be parts that the project would not touch. So some of it would go into perpetuity, and some of it may be touched when the Upper North Bay Road project is finally designed.
So not all the money will be wasted?
No, not at all.
Okay. All right, I mean, reluctantly, I mean, I want to help, but reluctantly, just this whole thing stinks because it's a Band-Aid to a long-term problem, and, you know, we're helping a little bit, but not enough.
That's not for me.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for me, and I have seconded, and I'm supportive exactly the way the commissioner said. I wouldn't be as negative about it. This is the first time we've had a bioswale like this. This came from the Urban Land Institute. This is totally consistent with our blue and green. So I think there's a lot of positive in trying this and seeing what happens. I'd love to do it at a lower price. If, you know, two options saves us a few hundred thousand, we'd do that. If there's a way to do it less, we could. But we want to do this. And I actually think this is our first action in terms of implementing what the Urban Land Institute told us about blue and green infrastructure, which represents a positive step towards water quality, which is right on the top of our community agenda. So I'm actually pleased that we're moving forward.
And if it works, other residents would be interested.
Commissioners, if I may, I think that in order to do, and I commend you, I'm not opposing what you're proposing, but just so that you understand or are informed of what FDOT has in plans today, as based on our meeting we had 2 weeks ago, is that they would be raising Alton Road about a foot. In doing so, they would be putting inlets on the swale to capture water that may flow from the street into the swale so that it doesn't go onto private property. And those inlets would take up the water and take it down into the storm sewer, obviously. What I stated before as far as our meeting with FPL is that obviously we cannot keep the wires, the laundry lines that exist on Alton Road and in a lot of other neighborhoods. So this is something we need to speak about with FPL as to where we can place these transformers, and the street ends are the only thing and the connection or the streets between Alton and North Bay are the only locations that we have. And so what I'm asking is that you look at this globally and not just into one street, one connecting street between Alton and North Bay, because it affects Alton Road, and it could potentially affect anything else that you may do on North Bay that I don't know about. I'm not involved with that. But on Alton Road, it seems to me that there needs to be a coordination of thought and of gameplay in order for anything to be successful for either the connecting roads or Alton. Because obviously if we do this, then we can't put transformers there. And we can't put them on the swale, and we can't put them on the medians, and we can't put them in the front lawns of people's homes.
All valid points. That's why doing things piecemeal is not smart, but...
Is the administration looking into the concerns that she's raising?
Just to clarify our point, though, that what's so unique about 59th Street is that we have four property owners that are willing to try this, and we have four properties that are, their swales are empty. Like our next-door neighbor, the house was foreclosed. There's no one living in the property. That swale is empty. 59th and North Bay Road, their swale is empty. Our swale is empty, and so is our next-door neighbor. So it's a perfect opportunity to do this type of installation. And then North Bay and the Bay, that will be empty once they clear that situation in there. So it's a perfect situation to do this experiment.
Commissioner, our designers were made aware of the FDOT project and coordinated with the FDOT to be sure that the design you see before you is not a conflict with their plans.
And Roy, to follow up, including the potential of undergrounding?
No, the location for undergrounding transformers has not been contemplated because there is no plan that identifies where those would go at this point.
We had a meeting with FDOT 2 weeks ago. None of this was brought up by the city nor by FDOT. All we're asking is for there to be a coordination. And I appreciate what this gentleman is saying, that there's four homes that are in agreement with it. But did anybody talk to the four homes on Alton, on the corner of Alton, or did we just talk to the four homes on the corner?
Okay,
well, there's two homes on Alton.
Where are you on Alton?
I'm on end of 59th, beginning of 60th.
I'm on 59th and Alton.
Okay, I'm at the end. I think we're on... I'm one
say,
block
say,
further.
Say hi to your neighbors.
I'm one block north of you.
What's your
name? Okay. Not on public
records.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Well, okay.
But all I'm saying is there needs to be a coordination. I happen
completely
to find
agree
out
with you,
here,
Myra, because whenever we're doing projects at the same time that other governmental entities are doing projects, we always should. So I would also make part of our motion that they coordinate what's happening with the Alton Road project so that we're all on the same
and with
agency.
FPL, you know, because we are looking at undergrounding Alton, like I said, for many, many years now. And we have to put these transformers somewhere. So thank you.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, for sure.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Can we do item number two?
Congrats.
Commissioner from the North is here. Who's going to present number two? Discussion regarding the annexation of North Bay Village to review property taxes, economic impact, and value. Anyone here for that?
I can give you an update. The last action that we took was obviously at the direction of the Finance Committee. We sent them. We sent both governments letters to their mayors and their town managers. We received no response. Following which, I believe the subsequent direction of this committee were that if we received no response, to do some kind of outreach and contact them directly. As you know, in order to annex, in this case, part of the, you know, the those part of the islands. I think it was the, what was it, the San Marino?
No.
The westernmost, well, the westernmost islands of the Venetian Islands, whatever that is, and North Bay Village. We need both the consent of this city commission and the consent of those councils, of those town councils. So before we initiate any process, the next step is outreach. So I ask for direction from this committee as to what kind of outreach it wants to conduct.
Lo and behold, we have a commissioner from North Bay Village.
Oh, there we go.
Commissioner Stroud, would you
welcome.
Care to...
Do you want to be annexed?
Well, I don't want to put you on the spot, but we have, you know, we have sort of been doing some light outreach.
As a candidate, I actually was here when this item was originally discussed. You know, what I would do is, again, like, I think this information is important for the residents to know about. I think it's a matter of, obviously, I'm not the sole decision maker on this process. It is something that I know the letter was received. I do feel as if that, you know, we should discuss it, obviously, with the North Bay Village Commission. We have our next meeting on July 9th, so if anyone would like to attend regarding, you know, what information was obtained or what additional information we can present to the residents, we can go from there.
Yeah. I might be traveling on that day. If I'm not, I would love to go just to maybe get a dialogue going. This is going to be years and years if anything were to happen. But I think particularly with sea level rise, among other things, it's going to be a discussion that a lot of the smaller municipalities will be having. But I also think there's a lot of synergistic opportunities for both cities to explore because our kids go to the same schools, use the same parks, all of that. And, you know, I think from an economic perspective, tax base, everything could help both communities. So I do think it's worth exploring. There's no rush, but I do think the economic realities and things like sea level rise and the amount of infrastructure investments that communities will have to be making, you're better off collaborating than trying to go it alone.
No, of course. And again, like, I can't, you know, be here to be able to make that decision solely, but I will say that even just some of the items that are being discussed right now are all things that we're discussing too. There's a lot of information that can just be additionally shared beyond that regarding underground utilities. You know, even obviously we're doing the soccer match. I've, you know, discussed with many of you regarding the necessities of what the school needs to be able to move forward on, parks and rec. There's a lot of ways where we should be collaborating no matter what would be the case regarding the annexation. But I do feel as if that regarding the economy of what's going on with the residents and also the businesses, I want to see them flourish. And this is a discussion that we should be, you know, bringing up to them. I don't want to be somebody that's going to say, you know, yay or nay on it, but I do feel as if that maybe if we can have someone attend on July 9th, which is our next commission meeting, to discuss it further with them.
And I do know we've been discussing doing the restaurant crawl, you know, our neighbors in North Bay Village and Miami Beach, particularly North Beach, just have a trolley, have one night of bar hopping and restaurant so we can explore our local businesses and to support a local business up there. I think that's kind of stalled. I'd like to see somebody in the city administration actually pick that up because it's not that hard to organize.
Bo will help with that?
What's that?
We're hoping that Bo will help with that.
Yeah. So I'm directing. I'd like to ask city staff to actually do something with this and not punt it anymore because I'm starting to get annoyed. It's not that much work.
Sure.
It's easy to do. It just needs a little bit of elbow grease.
Yes.
Would you guys support that?
Sure. I'll support that and make the motion. And going back to an earlier point, besides all of the projects that we're talking about, there would be a huge cost savings in the services through police and fire, which are a huge part of both of our budgets. If the communities were to combine, I think there would be an incredible financial savings in the consolidation of those life safety services.
And again, you know, with our, you know, Treasure Elementary School, right now, majority of those, you know, residents that attend that school are Miami Beach residents. You know, and we do, you know, bear a great deal of cost associated with that. So, again, that's something that I know that a lot of the residents do discuss, but obviously, you know, the police station, everything else we're trying to also build. These are all expenses that, you know, I would like to be able to see where we can maybe collaborate on, but obviously this is something that we have to discuss with both parties involved.
Mr. Chair, first, thanks for putting forth this, what I'd call a real big idea here. There's no doubt about it. This is thinking big. And I think the collaboration that we're talking about absolutely makes sense. That's win-win, and we should be proceeding. I think the basic economic proposition that 1 plus 1 probably gets to 3 is there. We don't need all the duplication. We could have synergies, and that makes a lot of sense. For me, the fundamental question is whether there is interest from the other community. And you're inviting us, which is very, very kind, Commissioner, and maybe we should take that offer up and have that dialogue. But that's the gating factor, because we need to know that we have a willing partner that would like to explore this before we spend too much. But I like the concept, and if that partner wanted it, then I think we would need to do serious due diligence around it.
And again, partnership regarding right now, obviously sharing resources, sharing the knowledge regarding a lot of these topics that are very similar that we're dealing with. And again, you know, I invite you to come to the meeting because we'll have both the residents, the full commission there, and I feel as if that at least you'll have a good gauge as to how they would feel about it.
Okay. I can't make the July 9th meeting, unfortunately, the subsequent meeting. Are you off in August?
We may have a special commission meeting, but we don't have anything scheduled for August.
We have another meeting in July.
We do, I believe, on the 23rd, so I can, you know,
can be there.
Make way for that.
Excellent. All of us can be there, I guess.
Sure.
Anybody want to go?
Let me know, and I'll be happy to go and visit my friends in North Bay Village.
You're always welcome.
Friends to the north. And then I think you made a motion, Commissioner Gongora, about directing staff to come back to with a plan to have a friendly neighborhood restaurant pub crawl to promote local businesses.
It's been in the talks
North
for
Beach
some time, so it'd be great to have that facilitated.
North Beach, North Bay Village.
Good. Can we have a report with an action plan for the next finance meeting?
Sure.
Staff, that'll be.
And I'll second that.
Thank you.
What time are your meetings, like the July 23rd meeting?
They're at 6:30.
Thank you.
Okay. And I can send an email detailing all of that as well.
Great.
Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Let's just do number three. Commissioner Gongora, same spirit?
Yeah, it's the same concept, except rather than an entire city, it's the westernmost Phoenician islands that are presently part of Miami that so many people think are part of Miami Beach. I think the only difference between the two items, because it's a small portion, I don't think it requires a voter referendum, but I think it still requires our commission to vote, City of Miami's commission to vote, the county commission to approve it. And I'd like to go forward with it. I don't think there's going to be an appetite in Miami, is my suspicion, to lose these beautiful islands. But I know that the residents, at least the majority of them, would like to become Miami Beach residents. So perhaps we could have the same level of outreach if you could reach out to City of Miami and see if we can get on an agenda and see if there's an appetite there to do this.
Okay. I did the same thing. I have not heard back from them. So at this point, you know, I agree that the next step was to do some outreach. You know, I don't know whether I'm the one to do it or whether it should be done at a higher level, you know, manager to manager. But, you know, obviously, I guess the rationale is that those islands are a significant part of their tax base. And, you know, they don't want to give them up.
I mean, I fully support this. This is even sort of an easier no-brainer than the prior discussion. And I think, to my knowledge, the residents there, I think, overwhelmingly would love to be part of Miami Beach from a service perspective and other things. Talk about willing partner. I can't imagine the City of Miami enthusiastically endorsing losing this asset that contributes so much money and consumes so little in city services. Mm-hmm. But for us, this makes a lot of sense. I would love to do this.
I'd love to do it too. I'm a little suspect in there, loving it, but maybe the residents can help push it a little bit as well. I think there's two associations. My aide is president of one of them, and I know I went to one of the meetings, and they are very enthusiastic. Most of them put Miami Beach on their address. They consider themselves residents of Miami Beach. Our millage rate is actually lower than Miami's, so their property taxes would be less. So it's a win-win-win for them.
And fire and police service, emergency services, are that to me is the most telling and important aspect of becoming part of Miami Beach. The other thing is, you know, maybe there's a trade to be had here. We have a little piece of Fisher Island, and City of Miami has the rest.
See, I thought that, but I was wrong, because I thought we could trade, do a horse trade of Fisher Island for the Venetian, but actually the rest of Fisher Island is unincorporated Miami-Dade.
I thought it was City of Miami.
I always thought it was City of Miami, too, but when I looked into it, it's actually part of Miami-Dade. But I would have pursued that trade also. What else can we go?
Well, maybe we have to go the political route and the resident activist route, where we, you know, try to talk to residents to agitate for the annexation.
Yeah, maybe the manager should reach out to the city manager there, and see the level of interest.
Okay, let's direct Jimmy to make the ask.
Absolutely. All right, that'll be the motion.
Okay.
Second.
That'll be an interesting conversation. Good. Okay. Anybody else have something that they want me to call up?
I do.
Okay, please.
You're up there. Well, no, I don't know how long
Item
I
six?
Can stay.
Can you do six?
I wanted to discuss number nine.
Number nine, yep, okay. That's quick.
I have a vote for number six down here.
Okay. Yeah, six and seven I was going to take next.
Yes.
So let's do nine, because you may have to leave, Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you. And I think... Except for you, I think everybody's kind of heard this in Neighborhoods Committee because we've discussed it a couple of times. The concept kind of started the day that we did the ribbon cutting of the Rainbow Crosswalk on 12th Street in a discussion with now former Assistant City Manager Kathy Brooks about having some way of acknowledging and formally recognizing the history of why 12th Street kind of became the center of the gay beach and that story. It got referred to the LGBT committee. They sent it back to neighborhoods. We had discussions on what would be appropriate for recognizing this. There's two options that came back to us in our agenda. Option one, which is less expensive, it's a little less than $3,000, would be to put a commemorative plaque on the wall that exists there. That wall is approximately 3 feet high. So if you were putting a plaque, it would be approximately, 6 inches to 24 inches off the ground. You would have to be literally on your knees or laying on the sidewalk to read the plaque. So I'm not a big fan of that idea. Option two is more expensive, unfortunately, but it would be to put a freestanding pedestal with some kind of commemorative plaque that would be about $15,000. In my opinion, if we're going to do it, we do it right or not at all. I don't really want to do the $3,000 plaque. I think it makes no sense. I personally would like to do this. I love the Rainbow Crosswalk, but it's, for whatever reason, it doesn't pop. It's a little bit muted colors. It's more artsy than the traditional rainbow pop that you see in other communities that do a rainbow display or a rainbow crosswalk. So I think doing something that explains it would be nice. I would support the pedestal, but if we're not going to do the pedestal, I don't want to do the plaque as a fallback. I'd rather just not do it. So I guess I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on this item.
I'd rather do it right. I think I'm comfortable with the pedestal.
Yeah, I'll move the pedestal.
Thank you. I'll second it.
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
If I could comment. I think you guys are on the right track. I agree with everything you're saying. Since I don't vote here, but I'll vote on it when it comes up. The only thing I'd like to mention is, do you see that it says proposed design option two, a pastel-colored mosaic pedestal? The colors of the mosaic, the idea of the mosaic pedestal is that the mosaic would match the pattern in the crosswalk so that just intuitively you look at the pedestal and you're like, oh, yeah, and it resonates with the crosswalk. So just the use of the word pastel, the color selection ought to match the crosswalk.
I agree completely. So, yes, please incorporate that into
the motion. So how might that look? I don't know, I'm not sure I follow.
That the pedestal would have...
The pedestal
instead
itself,
of being
be
just
a
plain concrete...
With a pedestal.
Right, yeah, and the pedestal, instead
cool.
of being plain, would have a mosaic of
cool.
tile that matched the
that would look cool.
pattern of the crosswalk.
Thank you. Yeah, that'll look cool. Awesome.
All right.
Thanks, John.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Item number six, discuss composting program in North Beach, similar to the program at the Miami Beach Botanical Garden.
Good morning, Commissioners. Elizabeth Wheaton, Environment and Sustainability Director with the City of Miami Beach. This item came before this committee last month for discussion, and first it was heard at the Sustainability and Resiliency Committee. The idea would be to establish a pilot composting program in North Beach, similar to what is done at the Botanical Gardens. It was the recommendation of the Sustainability Committee to start a program with the Miami Beach Botanical Gardens as the manager of the pilot. We've been working closely with them to identify the right site that would be accessible to the residents. We found that the parking lot just south of 85th Street has enough space to start a program which would service approximately 100 residents, and it also has that parking component. As the program was developed, we estimated that it would cost about $75,000 to get that up and running. Currently, there is $75,000 allocated for a mechanical composter as part of the North Beach Yard project. It would be our recommendation that that project be unfunded and reallocated through the operating budget to establish a manual composting program with the Botanical Gardens.
And what's the anticipated benefit of this in terms of produce and things that might come from this?
Sure, and we have the Botanical Gardens here today. So through the composting site, they would be the creation of soil that's very high and rich in nutrients. Then that soil would be available that residents could come and pick up and then utilize within their own gardens or in their homes.
How is it protected? How is the compost pile protected from for-profit businesses coming in, taking the soil just to use in gardens that like gardeners?
And so this project would include the city installing a fence around the site. We would put messaging on that fence to let people know that we have a composting site behind it. The composting site would be locked, and there would be set hours in which the Botanical Gardens would have it open. We would have a box outside of the locked area where people drop off their compost, but in order to come and pick up the soil, you'd have to come during those set hours or go to the Botanical Gardens.
And prove residency?
Yes, they would have to prove residency.
Thank you.
I'm just reading here. The cost is $75,000 to get it up and running, and then the annual cost to maintain, because I'm reading it's two staff members working 10 to 20 hours per week.
And that's two staff members from the Botanical Gardens, and that's one of the reasons why we would be looking for them to be the managers so that we're not utilizing staff that doesn't have that background. I'm going to ask Sana to come up, who can give more specifics on the actual maintenance of a program once it's established.
Good morning.
We've been very successful with our composting program, and what we found recently is how wonderful the garden itself is responding to it. We're working to promote that and show people the results of, earth stewardship. We have some regular composters right here. The idea was to, because we have the experience, and Sana and Cassidy Fry are very passionate. I've never met such passionate people about compost, actually. But they're very passionate about what they're, the intention and bringing it to the community. So because we have the expertise on staff, it would give us an opportunity to branch out as well into the northern end of the city, because not many, we're not going to get the mileage from people to on that end of town to come to deliver to our site. And it's about education. And it could really the seed to start what could be a broader program throughout the city at different locations to make it more convenient for people. And it's awareness and education, which actually has a great return on investment because we get to use it. And and see the results. It gives people an opportunity to become part of the community, and I don't mean to use any more garden phrases, but they become rooted into what they're doing, and they can teach children, teach the families, and then of course bring it home. And there's a revenue opportunity in selling it. We sold how much compost yesterday?
36 gallons.
A lot. 36 gallons?
Yeah.
How much do we sell it for?
Right now, there's different grades, whether it's unsifted or chunky. But the unsifted stuff is $1.33 a gallon, which is pretty good once you're thinking of all the labor and time it takes to make this incredibly organic, nice soil that grows produce, as you were asking. It's pretty much the best thing for that.
Yeah, but 36 gallons at a buck something is... call it $50 a day. Yeah. I mean, it's not lucrative.
It's a feel-good moment.
Right, this is not lucrative. And it's okay. I'm just saying that...
On a larger scale, it most definitely is, I think. And it goes towards a whole new conversation about landscaping and sustainability. And I think it's really beneficial for any city to get into it.
Mr. Chair, additionally, it's not empirical or statistical whatsoever, but I did put a post on social media about this North Beach compost potential. And the North Beach community was really very excited about it. I was surprised by how much interaction I got on that post of people saying, oh, good, now I don't have to ride my bike with my compost all the way to the botanical garden. I can, So I do believe that participation is going to be very healthy.
I will make the point that the mechanical composter doesn't really benefit much more than that particular restaurant. So if you're going to spend the same amount of money to do years of a one that will serve the entire community, I don't see why not.
Do you have to add payroll to the botanical garden staff in order to run this?
I've added, Sana is full-time staff, and I've added Cassidy to our payroll already, and so he feels that he can divide his time between what he's doing for us in fertility and compost and be able to split his time to manage both properties. We're already doing a program right now with WeWorks, where he's going and picking up their waste and then putting it into our compost hub. We're running out of space. I don't think we can take on very much more. And how many people are visiting us generally?
I'd say like at least 100 people on a monthly basis. Families, though, too.
Yeah, and then we're doing a lot of education. So it also, because every Saturday morning we have he's available for conversation, and he's had quite a bit of an audience, and he conducts classes at WeWorks and different other pickup locations, which can also be scheduled for North Beach as well.
I mean, the reason the North Beach Yard has a compost component to it is because, obviously, there's a lot of food being served there, so the food scraps are right there on site, so, it makes logical sense. And they have an organic garden where they'll be growing food to be used in the yard. So therefore, if they had soil that was coming out of the composting, it all makes sense. But I'm just, as a standalone, to have it up there, sure, it all feels great. But economically, the cost to maintain it, the yield from it in terms of, what you might sell the soil for, this is an expense. This is not something that is not synergistic like it was for the yard, so I think some people are like, oh, it was going to be in the yard, just move it. It was in the yard because it made a lot of sense as part of an overall operation. As a standalone, I do think that it's something to be aware of, that it's expensive, and it's an expense. We're not going to make money on this.
This is not to make money. This is to provide an amenity to the residents, to the public of North Beach, who want it. And people are, you heard them, so they have a compost that they don't really advertise, hey, everybody in Miami Beach, 90,000 residents, come compost, which if they did, they wouldn't be able to service it out of the South Beach location. Plus, you have residents from an entire city going to 17th Street or 18th Street, which is, not probably what we want. So I see it as an amenity for the residents.
many, many North Beach people want it. It's the right thing to do. It keeps material which can provide an incredible addition of nutrients and health to our topsoil out of the landfill, where it's just taking up space and not even degrading at a proper pace. So I really hope you will support it. It is a minor amount. We have the money. It's an amenity for our residents that people are excited about.
Yeah. Can I say something? Yeah. If the North Beach Yard and that goes through, the system will most definitely be able to process that waste and give back the soil. And why focus on one restaurant when you can focus on the whole community?
Yeah. I just reread the item because I thought that the motion that we made last time was to give it a positive opinion from the committee, but to put it at the budget time when we were looking at enhancements. But I just read that the motion was to reach out to North Beach Yard and see if they were going to do it or not, or if that money was going to be used. I guess North Beach Yard is not happening anytime soon.
I'm still optimistic. And
I think we all are. I think we all want
it. Yeah, it's.
And this doesn't invalidate.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, I can talk to you about it. I'm just gonna have to push and move some things to make it happen. But they're interested, and there's just a lot of moving parts there. But it can happen. I just gotta focus on it. But the issue is, if we do this, it will benefit the North Beach Yard, or whatever version of it will come back to us. So the reason this is even there was because it was part of an overall project. Mm-hmm. I worry about this being a standalone, but because I am optimistic that the North Beach Yard is going to happen, I'm supportive of this. If the North Beach Yard wasn't going to happen, you know, it's one of these feel-good things to have, but as a standalone, it's hard for me to get excited about this.
Mr. Chair, if I may... I'm supportive of this as well. We heard this as sustainability, so I would like to move forward. I understand we have the upfront cost. Have we ballparked? What are we talking on an annual operating cost basis? Do we have a round number for city cost? City cost.
The cost would be minimal to the city. We would have to make sure that we have funding to maintain the fence if there was to be any damage to that. Of course, the box and keep the signage up. But from the city's end, once we have those items installed, that would be complete.
Great. I would like to move forward with this, particularly if we are optimistic of North Beach Yard. But even on a standalone, it could have value. I think there's demand. The one thing I'd ask is that we have some periodic reporting on how it's being utilized. So that part of this is it's a community amenity. It is not about making money in any way. But we want to make sure we're getting utilization. And if by chance we're getting great utilization, we'll celebrate. And if we're not, then we'll take other action. So I think that would be the one thing, is some sort of reporting on the utilization. But I will support this, and I'll move it.
Yeah, thank you for that. I would like reporting periodically, whether it's quarterly or semi.
Sorry, I would like to see some reporting on usage, just to make sure that it's being used. If it's not being used, we can move it. Because these things, you could deconstruct it and move it, right?
Yeah.
Because it makes no sense if it's not being used to just leave it there. So I'd like to see.
I think it takes a lot of marketing, on both of our parts. It would be an extension of the garden into a neighborhood that, residents might not even have experienced the botanical garden. That would draw people from there, and as well as education. There's a lot in the education component of it that. That I think everyone would prosper. It's a very progressive idea, and many cities are incorporating that.
And the other thing I'd like to ask is that there be no increase in headcount and payroll to run this thing. Because last thing I want to hear is that we had to add somebody. We had to add somebody so they can run a North Beach Yard to run the compost that nobody's using. I just want to be careful about that. And the thing with composting, to make it really work, the reason it works in some cities is dense cities where it's easy to get the scraps to, you have restaurants participating, composts are used in rural areas. As a standalone sitting on the west lots, I worry that it's not going to be effective. So, yeah, marketing is part of it, but also, let's face it, it's hard enough to get people to recycle in their own house, mm-hmm. to say, go and separate all your food scraps, drive it,
what it smells in your car to a composting facility. These are real challenges, and I worry about this being as a standalone project. I don't know that it makes sense, but I'm willing to give it a go.
I mean, seeing the participation on a daily basis, I think it's completely sustainable. People really get into it. It's not just throwing your plastic water bottle in a recycling bin. It's going there and getting your hands in the soil and really feeling like you're part of a community that's going in the right steps.
Right. It's good for the environment, and I'm willing to give it a try. Definitely keep tabs on it and report back, because if it's not being used, we don't want to just have it for no reason. So I'll second the motion with a report back, I don't know, 6 months after the program, so we know what's going on.
Regular documentation, because there's sign-in sheets and, you know, and email contacts and so forth. It requires that, I think, on our part as well, and we're doing it in-house regularly. And, you know, we literally take its temperature on a regular basis. Excellent. It's quite interesting how it works.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Stay up. We'll do item 7. Discuss Heritage Tree Designation Awareness Campaign and Incentive Program. This is Vice Mayor Malikoff. You're only going to be vice mayor for another 2 days. Are you aware of that?
That's right. I have to change everything.
And then I take over.
That's right.
I need business cards the whole bit.
I didn't change my business cards.
Okay. So, yes, this item was co-sponsored by Vice Mayor Malikoff and Commissioner John Alamon. The intent was to come up with some recommendations for implementation of a heritage tree designation, awareness campaign, and incentive program. In 2015, the city created the first tree ordinance, which allowed us to regulate trees within city property. Before that, it was a responsibility of Miami-Dade County. This allows us to charge fees for when trees do need to be removed and have that mitigation be invested back into the city. This ordinance does include language for heritage trees, giving special recognition to those trees or groupings of trees that are considered historic or have intrinsic value to the community. One thing looking at that language, we would recommend that when we update the tree ordinance that we change some of the language to be more specific for what type of trees can be designated as heritage. So, for example, of a given species, what is the size so that it's clear it's not just a subjective determination. We are going to be bringing a first reading of proposed ordinance amendments in July. So we would include that language. But the program, after meeting with Commissioner Malikoff and Commissioner Alamon, we came up with a number of items for discussion. First would be the potential of creating an annual maintenance allowance for private property owners so that they would maintain their trees and do the annual maintenance that would keep those trees healthy. Second would be to create a program that highlights properties that have been designated, that have a heritage tree designated on their property. We already have a GIS inventory, so we could add heritage trees on private property to that inventory, because our inventory only includes public property. We also have our MB Rising Above mobile app, and we could highlight heritage trees on that app. Third, right now there's a $272 review fee, an inspection fee, for if a private property wants to designate a tree as heritage. This fee potentially could be waived. Also, a number of trees, such as the banyan trees, are a prohibited species by Miami-Dade County. In order to keep these trees on your property, you're required to get a variance from the county. We could look at the city covering those costs in order to get that tree kept on property. Next would be to develop a specialized plaque that private properties could showcase at their front door or by their mailbox, similar to what some municipalities have done with historic preservation. And then finally, having a special tree plaque here at City Hall, which would commemorate trees that have been designated as heritage trees. Right now, we have the Tree Preservation Trust Fund, where we collect the money from the tree permitting program.
We have a fund balance of $409,000. I want to note that this money is used annually for a number of programs, including pruning of young trees, which have already been installed as part of projects. In order to make sure that these trees get to an older age, it's very important that pruning early on occurs. We also use that money for education and outreach, our annual GIS inventory, programming, and we're also now considering needing to use that money for additional pruning of pine tree if we do not get money in the operating budget for next year. It is imperative if we want to keep the pine trees that we do annual maintenance so that they will remain strong.
Well, you mentioned the commemorative tree program, and I haven't seen it advertised particularly recently, although the big sign up in the green space is very good. I wondered whether there are still sales of trees going on or whether it can be promoted perhaps in a video or a advertisement or some other way so that residents know that they can, in fact, purchase a tree in honor of somebody, in memory of somebody, or just to celebrate a special occasion and watch that tree grow in a public area near where they live.
We can definitely work with communications to see about getting out additional material related to the commemorative tree program. We do get a number a year. We have some, you know, you can give the exact counts, but we had one recently at graduation. So we get a lot of graduations and anniversaries of people interested.
But it's listed here that it's some of the funds are going to that, and that didn't make sense because the tree sales should carry itself. It shouldn't be a cost. It should be a way of getting more income.
So we have the program.
You can talk. Yeah, so we've noticed that due to the maintenance costs of some of these commemorative trees, there's an additional funding aspect that we're trying to address. Trees in order to grow in a healthy way need structural pruning at the young age, and so the cost associated with the planting of the commemorative tree is only meeting the significant funding to plant those trees, but the actual maintenance costs associated with the structural pruning that's needed is not being able to be funded through that commemorative tree fee. in addition, we are getting a couple requests for commemorative trees per year. This year we've gotten three requests as of yet. But we've also looked in ways of streamlining the application process through online.
It has to be made simple, yeah. Number one. And if the $500, $1,500, $3,000 isn't covering it, we can look at increasing it so that, I mean, it shouldn't be a drain. It should be an addition.
Correct.
So we get more trees in the city.
Correct.
So I like this program, and I congratulate my colleagues on what they're putting together. I see that we have funding that's there. They look like there are six opportunities to enhance. Do you need a recommendation? What action would you like from us today?
We're looking for direction on how you would like to see an incentive program be structured. If you would like to create a program where the city would be giving private properties money in order to maintain trees on private property, because that was one of the items. A number of the items, such as highlighting heritage trees, that's something that we can do already. But if you want us to look at waiving fees or, again, providing additional funds to private property, we would need that direction.
So I certainly would support the things that have no cost to the city, like the highlighting, and I'd look to my colleagues. Which of the economic ones would you recommend?
So for me, first of all, designating a private property, we can do this for the public trees, no problem, and I'm sure we will. Designating a private property specimen tree, a heritage tree, is like designating a historic home. So it does come with some limitations, and the reason we do it is because we're more likely to protect that tree. This is something that I personally have been working on
for 3 years because of residents coming to me when new developments, new in particular, new single-family homes are being developed, and they're seeing very old, very large specimen trees being removed. Mm-hmm. There's something about a very old tree that even though we have very robust mitigation rules and they have to plant a bunch of little trees, it somehow never is good enough, right, as when you lose one of these very old, spectacular trees. So we want to provide even more incentives, I think, mm-hmm. for a private property owner to accept the limitations that come with the heritage designation, that tree really does have to be protected. So we need to inspire them to do that. We need to incent them to do that. I mean, I looked at this. I'm in favor of all of these. Any particular heritage tree only needs to be pruned through this program probably every 3 years, so it's not like every single tree could receive even the financial benefit every year. If you wanted, certainly all the ones that are non-financial, I'm in favor of all six. Item one, where we would create an annual maintenance allowance for private property owners, is probably the one that has the most material financial implications. If you wanted to start with even a small cap that you were comfortable with, that you felt was easy to absorb, I would be thrilled. We could always evaluate it every year to say, is it too much? Is it too little? Are people responding to this or not?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may, what do we have as a ballpark of all the economic ones' annual cost, and to the cap, what might be a reasonable cap just to get us going?
I think a reasonable cap would be about $30,000. We could see how many people respond. We estimate that there is anywhere from 100 to 200 heritage trees within the city. Of course, not everyone who has a heritage tree would want to designate, but we know a number of people that would. And then, you know, I think that looking at getting about 20 to 25 people in the first year would be a goal, and then additional money for that would give us room also for those waiving of review fees and paying the county when a variance is needed.
Look at the heartache in the community that was caused when the invasive Melaleucas, which were also ill, were removed from Flamingo Park. I mean, a tremendous amount of community upset. Those are public trees, so we can control what happens with any public tree. But that same heartache comes with the removal of a private tree where we don't have any authority to tell an owner whether they can or cannot remove a tree, as long as they comply with the mitigation. However, these heritage tree designations are more significant, and that is allowing us to provide much better protections.
No, it takes so many years. I'm talking about 30, 40, 50 years to get a heritage tree to the size that it becomes a heritage tree. It's not something that you plant today and 5 years later, it's a heritage tree. It takes many, many years. And because of that, there are so many single-family homes who've been sold, that the homes are raised and new homes are built, which is, you know, they're built higher up and they're more resilient, et cetera. But part of it is there's these gorgeous trees that they then remove and in order to get the machinery in to build the new house, and that's what's causing so much angst.
I think this is a reasonable investment to protect our heritage. I like the idea of having a first-year cap using the administration's $30,000. Mr. Chair, are you comfortable with all
the $30,000 cap is fine.
Okay, good. So I'll move it.
Second.
Good.
Great. Thanks. Great.
I know this was listed as a deferred item, but I've been asked to bring it up, and that's item number 17. Is David Martinez here? Yeah, I see you there, David. That's a discussion to examine the scope and funding options for the 72nd Street project. Commissioner Aleman, I think you would
Thank
like
you.
To discuss
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I asked you all to get an update on this and see what action you might think you need to take. This is our 72nd Street geobond project. I know there was an update at the geobond meeting. I was out of the state at the time, so I couldn't attend. But I'm worried about this project getting stuck in the mud, and so I want you to have a chance to receive an update and see if there's anything, you know, that we can do to keep it moving.
So you just want to give an update of?
Yes. And where are you, and are you stuck in the mud, or is that?
Yes, I am stuck in the mud. So where we are is we're completing, we're just about done with the last feasibility effort that we had taken on. However, the next step is to start preparing a design criteria package. In order to prepare a design criteria package, I need to understand what is going to be the ultimate scope of the work. Without that, we would be wasting our money if we start putting something else together. So that's where we are. We're also preparing a memorandum for the July 19th budget finance hearing. That's going to have a lot more detail in it in terms of the costs and some other items, operation and maintenance, a lot more comprehensive to hopefully shed more light into what are the needs. We can talk more about the programming and some of those type of things.
And will that include the utilities? Because there's a lot
yes.
of utilities involved in
yes.
the property.
Yes, and even as a matter of fact, as we speak, we have a meeting next week with FPNL to learn more about the transmission lines, and even though we have some ideas of what that could cost, just to really fine-tune it. So we really have all the information. We also have we already have an aquatics expert on board with Desmond, so a reputable firm that's going to be part of the criteria package preparation. So we're at a place where we're ready to move.
So as I take it, you've got scope questions that need to be answered so that you can put the finals on that design criteria package and issue it. So what are those scope questions?
Well, as the program has been identified through the process and as we put together the information that went on for the general obligation bond program, there's several elements on there, as we all know, that have been very defined. Some of them are a little more ambiguous, actually. Again, we got to figure out how big of a library do we want. Confirm that it's 500 parking spaces. We need to talk about the retail or the commercial in terms of what size. Most of the elements are already pretty defined. So if I were to be told go with exactly what we have, we can move. Obviously, there will be some internal discussions between all the departments that are involved in this. You know, parking, parks and recreation, real estate, and we would all have a brainstorm session to fine tune the details.
Well, and on those specific on the size of the library, the number of parking spaces, and the size of the retail. I think what we had done is we had specified minimums. We didn't want to specify an exact amount because we wanted to leave room for creativity. Each of the bidders is going to come forward with their concept. And so based on that, those factors are going to vary somewhat. So we specified a minimum threshold. Above that, they can exceed our expectations. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So what is the real – is it the $10 million? Did we resolve that? What is the real – how can we help you? There's four of us here to get this into a posture where it can be issued.
Mr. Chair, just a couple questions. One, you mentioned O&M costs, David. When will we have those?
We are putting those together, and they were going to be part of the memorandum that we would issue for the July 19th finance meeting. That was the intent to put it on.
Okay.
On that memorandum that we're putting together as we speak.
I'm working with David on that. We heard a lot of input, frankly, at the last meeting about. You know, I guess we had focused on the funding gap, the $10 million gap, and it sort of turned into a scope discussion. And so we're trying to hit all the above on the July 19th meeting and have a separate item where we can hopefully get to, you know, get through all that. And if that discussion, and if we don't get there, then we have a meeting a week later. So we're just trying to, you know, get out of the mud, I guess you would say.
And has our Residence Oversight Committee, have they reviewed the project of late? Have they provided any commentary around some of the stuff we're talking about?
They have. It comes up almost at every it comes up at every Oversight Committee meeting. They want to make sure this project happens. I know that they're concerned that whether or not it's going to happen or not timely. I don't know. No, Maria's not here.
No, that's okay. If they're engaging on it, that's what I want to say. I supported this project when we went forward. I do support the project. My concern is of the additional $10 million. I think we have lots of other capital needs. I viewed the GO bond as helping to really solve a lot of our capital problems and really take a step forward. And now to see that this will usurp some discretionary capital is not something I'm comfortable with. I do still support the project. I'd love to do it for the budget we went to the voters with.
I like to do things right, and I like to, you know, never settle for good. I like to go for great, especially when we have, you know, once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, particularly this project. I will keep repeating myself. Last year I said, don't take the $10 million off. You'll regret it. People had strong conviction that, oh, we can value engineer. There's no problem. Now we regret it. Nevertheless, I still think we've got to go for the right plan, the full plan. The community deserves it. I think you have to look at this as we have underinvested in North Beach for so long, for decades and decades and decades. This is a catch-up. So, yeah, it's a lot of money, but it's a Swiss Army knife of a project. It's public parks. It's an aquatic center. It's a parking garage. It's retail. It's a library. It's so many wonderful things. And it's still a fraction of what we've been investing in South Beach for the past 30-something years. So I still want to go with the big plan. It's why last year I begged us not to do this. And now we got to find the money. We'll find the money. It bothers me tremendously. I'm going to keep hammering you guys to have courage, to don't, you know, seek a compromise just to move things forward. Do things the right way. That's how we ended up in this spot to begin with. Nevertheless, I'm going to continue to advocate for the full funding of the project to do it right.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I mean, if this was that discussion, rewinding the clock, and we were talking about it, that would be a different discussion. But we compromised. We talked about how much we could fit. We said, what can we do? And there was a explicit decision, went through our resident committee, went through several processes. We went here. We went to the public in 15 to 20 meetings and said, we could do this for this number. And we pledged fiscal responsibility. Now, less than a year later, to come back and take $10 million from areas that we need capital, that doesn't fit for me. So that's my problem. Had we done it at the time, that would have been a spirited discussion, but we landed in a place and we have the funding to do a great project. I support the project. I want to see it happen, but I really think we need to live within our means.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Nothing precludes us, and it's not fiscally irresponsible for us to complement geobond projects from our annual capital plan. In fact, in our 2020 capital plan, we plan to do just that already. We plan to purchase additional security cameras. We plan to purchase additional lighting. Those are geobond items. So if we're going to say that we're not going to complement geobond projects with annual capital, then we should go ahead and take those line items right out, because that's exactly what it is. In this case, we scoped a project. We were trying to figure out at the time how to right-size the GO bond. This project was given an arbitrary head cut without saying that we were going to reduce the scope. In fact, I was with who was I with? Oh, I got mangoes from Rogelio Madan in the planning department, and I asked him for a follow-up on the Aria Town Center garage project. My understanding, and I was looking to see maybe somebody can be texting Rogelio or Carmen in the planning department, that Pacific Star Capital has submitted a plan to planning for their project that does no longer involve the acquisition of the city lot, and does no longer require the $10 million of parking funds that were sitting allocated to that project. So if that's the case, we've got that money that can be moved over now. I believe that not only will we have majority support for the full scope of this project, which is a true civic center for North Beach, but there is overwhelming public support in North Beach for the full scope of this project. And I think if we deliver anything less, the community is going to have a big issue with us for doing so. So what we need to do is resolve this and get this thing out the door per our promises. In the tranche one, we have a design to complete, the first step of which is issuing this package that David Martinez is trying to issue. So what I would say is at our July 19th finance meeting, let's be prepared to make some decisions and put, that's a full budget meeting, yes? So we'll have the full commission. Let's be prepared to make a real decision at that meeting so that we can get David out of the mud.
yeah, so Commissioner Samuel, I hear you, and I agree with you on, you know, trying to, you know, stay within scope. However, you know, this was one particular item where I thought it was a mistake to cut back. And the truth of the matter is that some of the money was a substantial portion of the money is to go towards the parking garage element of it. It's money that we really should and have to spend. And whether it comes from the GEO bond or other buckets, it doesn't matter. It's money that we've allocated and committed to spending for parking needs. And as Commissioner Aleman just said, the fact that there may be a deal in the works right now for Town Center that we had previously allocated money, right? We had previously allocated to fund a parking garage there that might now be freed up. That allows us to move it to north to the 72nd Street project. We do this all the time. Like, regardless of the GEO bond, we move money around all the time to meet needs. We scale back on plans. We increase plans based on needs. And so as we look at this project now, we realize that to do it right, we need the additional funds. We have potentially those funds that we had previously committed to another project have potentially now been freed up. So I would be comfortable taking that money from what we had been earmarking for the Town Center garage and moving it towards this project. Okay. But I don't know that we can move forward yet because we still don't know the status of the Town Center ARIA project, we'll call it, right?
Yeah, once we have it clarification turns out, got word that Rogelio is out of the office today.
Okay, so. Yeah, because I mean, it might be a moot point. If that money's not available, then we'd have to look at this in another light.
Right.
David, what direction do you need right now from us beyond this discussion?
Until I know what the scope is, there's nothing I can do, really. Okay. And it's all based on whether we have 53.8 or 63.8.
Yeah. I think you're hearing from me, for sure, to shoot for the higher number to do it right, because I think we're going to regret it long term. This is a project we'll do once, and it'll be here for 50-something years or more. We got to do it right. Commissioner Aleman, I think, is in that direction. Commissioner Samuel is not.
I'm in that direction, but I don't want it coming from the transportation $10 million. I really think we're going to need that down the line because eventually we're really going to have cross the MacArthur transportation.
I like
when, I don't know, but I think we're going to need that $10 million.
Yeah. Well, it looks
but
like
I'm for doing it the right way.
Today, but perhaps on July 19th we'll be able to.
Look forward to it.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
So a couple weeks away. Anybody want to hear another item out of order?
Mr. Chair, can we hear item number 4? Because I think it dovetails with the conversation we just had a little bit.
Yeah, go. Item number 4. Discussion regarding the Budget Advisory Committee's motion that the City of Miami Beach complete a facility condition assessment. So what is this?
Just an update. We are in the process of conducting facility condition assessments per the recommendation of the Budget Advisory Committee. Those are scheduled to start after 4th of July. It'll take a couple months. What we'll get is an updated, and we currently have that available to us. The last one was done in 2014, and industry standards, you know, dictates that we should be doing it every 5 years. And as new facilities come online, those should be added and included to give us a proper FCI or facility condition index, which is how we base our budget or capital budget. So those will start to take a couple months, and we'll have that ready and you know, produce such document. Concurrently to that, we're in the market right now for a new work order management system, which will all integrate and tie in together to allow us to be better about capital budget planning. And no commissioner.
Better about capital budget planning, and maybe I'd open to our CFO too. What might we be doing? What are sort of the best practices in terms of sort of multi-year capital budget planning?
I've worked with the BAC on this item, and I think what we're really talking about here is helping decision makers such as city administration and the city commission be able to see What is the right number in order to properly maintain the assets of the city? So when you say the assets of the city, that covers a lot of ground. And little by little, we've been working through our inventory of assets, if you will, to try to get a handle on what is that condition, what's the useful life. If you, you know, tried to extrapolate this out over time, what would be a good average amount of money that you would need to set aside in order to properly maintain those facilities? At this moment in time, it's pretty obvious that we fund only the highest priorities at this point. And so there's a lot of deferred maintenance from the past, especially that we're trying to get caught up on. And we used to have quite a, you know, much more funding, but during the recession, the, you know, a lot of that funding got cut. And so we've been trying to slowly try to build it back up, but it's been slow going. And so I think the direction from the BAC is, well, even if we can't fund it today, let's make sure everyone understands what that delta really is, so that that way, as maybe conditions improve in the future, we can make a good business case for setting aside additional funding for that purpose.
Yeah, John, and we'll talk about it more at our budget meetings, but be a little more specific about what you're talking about. It's my understanding that at one time, not too long ago, we used to have a dedicated millage rate for repair and replacement for things like, say, streets and sidewalks, and then we discontinued it. Maybe it was after the recession, and now we're starting to see the effects of that, right? We can't repair our sidewalks and streets because we don't have the dedicated funding sources, and so that's why the GEO bond is allowing us to catch up on some of those projects. And, you know, I would ask you, just me personally, to, as part of your presentation during the budget meeting, to talk to us about what that repair and replacement millage rate used to be and what it might look like under today's budget, because I will probably be favorably disposed to you know, looking at it, because all we're doing is deferring. And the problem is that our city looks like crap, and then 10 years from now, you got to, like, pass a huge millage rate increase. It's kind of like a special assessment in a condo, right? So right. I just think we have to have discipline. It's a small amount we have to set aside, and that way our city looks new all the time.
Yeah. You got to do it that way.
I'm sorry.
I think it's very important that it's done each year, and that yeah. we really, the loss of that extra millage to do this on an annual basis has really hurt the city. And yeah. when people complain, they go to New World Symphony and they leave on Pennsylvania or they leave on any of the streets around, I can't believe, I think I'm in a third world yeah. city. That should never be. Yeah. And I think we need to do that to be budget-wise.
I strongly echo my colleague's comments, and I think Commissioner Arriola put it best. You know, if you think about folks in a condo, they set aside money each year based on expected needs. My sense is right now we're not doing that, and we need to build that discipline. So what I think we want to do here, this was strictly an update. I support the administration's recommendation for the technology tools. In addition to Commissioner Arriola's request, what I would like to see as part of this year's budget is what projects are we not funding that we're pretty sure we need to do at least next year, like a yeah. one-year look. Yeah. And then what I'd like to add to that is as we approach the fiscal year 2021 budget, that we have a multi-year capital plan. So that would be my yeah, motion.
100%. Yeah. Is Mr. Cooley here? Roy Cooley here? Oh, there you are. Roy, would you like to throw some spice on this? I know you have some viewpoints on this because
be
you've educated me on some of this. And I'm going to talk about this, I think, quite a bit during our budget cycle because, you know, we have so many great things going on in the city, and then to be you know, criticized for cracked sidewalks and, you know, streets right. that are bumpy. It's like, and it's because we didn't have the guts to keep millage rates where they really needed to be, and we've underinvested in the city. And we had to do this massive GEO bond to catch up because as politicians we want to be, you know, known as, oh, I reduce the millage rate every year. Well, that looks good, and you kick the can down the road, but then we get to inherit the mess.
Yeah, if I could, because I absolutely agree with you, Commissioner Arriola. And we were bold with the GEO bond, and thankfully the community came around. So I would just offer two comments. What would happen if they didn't?
I know.
And second, what a golden opportunity now to reset the clock, because as we think about these geobond projects, they will also need capital renewal. So the last thing we would do is not get this right, because we did it at this moment. Now is the time to get our hands around this.
Commissioners, pavement seems to be one of the most popular conversations in the community with me right now. Everywhere I go, people want to talk about pavement. I had the opportunity yesterday to go through all the area of Meridian that the geobond recently funded repaving from 5th to 15th, and it's quite a beautiful site. It's got temporary striping on it. Once the permanent stripes go down, it looks fabulous, and everyone walking around and talking says the same thing. But to put this in some kind of perspective, if we repaved every street in our city every 15 years, that's what we believe it would take to have really nice-looking streets all the time. That's going to cost us $7 to $8 million a year. Into perpetuity, that's what it costs. We're not investing that now, so that is why we've got so many streets behind, and our geobond committed $30 million in total. But that just gets us started. It would take a long-term commitment with a lot of money if we want the Meridian Street look to be citywide. It does look great, and it's a policy decision. If you tell us that's what you want, we've certainly got the capacity and the ability to do the work. It's just a lot of money. That's one subject that's getting a lot of conversation. One that John and I have spent a lot of time on recently is talking about maintaining some of our newer assets that aren't in bad shape yet, which is stormwater. We have spent a couple of $100 million in the last few years on stormwater assets, and they're going to have aggressive maintenance. And what John and I was discussing was, if we allow these assets to function until they fail, we're going to know they fail in a flood. We're going to know it fails when somebody's property's flooded because the pump quit. And as mechanical equipment, we know it wears out, so we're going to have to aggressively maintain this equipment if we don't want to face failure. Today we have 40 stormwater pump stations. And if what we've got prepared that we're going to bring forward to you very soon is what we're calling a predictive maintenance plan, where we've identified every major component in the system and how long it should live, what its useful life is, and replace it at that point, not wait until it fails in the middle of a storm. And that's going to require a lot of dedicated funding for stormwater, too. Now, we have an outside consultant doing that for us for our water and sewer systems. We believe the water and sewer systems from decades of deferred maintenance have very significant needs, and we'll bring that to you late in the fall when we get those numbers, and we're trying to prepare it ourselves for stormwater. But everything you're talking about is what John and I have been working with, and I think when the numbers are revealed, they're going to be big.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, just a comment. So as we're making the city better and more beautiful, we're expanding the infrastructure base, so this problem is getting exponentially bigger. So we need to get on with it, maybe not for today, but we do need to talk about creative funding, how we allocate the right amount of money, how we start, maybe, you know, open the discussion at some point. If we do proceed, for example, with sponsorship for the convention center, maybe we would take dedicated funding for that. I know we've set aside the minimum rent for the convention center hotel, but there will be additional rents there. But we need to find some creative funding sources here. I'm open to creative ideas, but I think we have to get on with this.
Agreed. You know, one thing I want to encourage all of us when we think about, you know, money, the expenses, oh, my God, the investment and the maintenance, and, yeah, that's the cost element. One of the major reasons that I was so strong for the geobond is it truly, in my opinion, completely convinced it's an investment in our city that is going to have a return on the investment. A lot of people think, it's a cost, you know, it's an expense. I'm like, no, the cost of doing nothing is declining quality of life, declining property values, and then sort of a race to the bottom. The reason I was so forceful on the geobond is that by investing in our parks, in our infrastructure, in public safety, it will increase property value, yep, increase quality of life, and so the revenue will increase as well. So I just want us to be mindful, and that's why I champion so many things like, you know, programming and things that will bring more tourism and resort taxes and stuff, because, you know, our costs are going to go up regardless, just because that's just the environment we live in. But so we also have to think on the revenue side, how do we increase property values because of the taxes as well as resort taxes and the investment in our tourists and residents? So, and that's why when you hear me push for certain things, it's also to see the revenue increase, because we know our costs are increasing. We can't cut our way to prosperity. We got to keep this thing going in both directions.
Yeah, I'm in vehement agreement with you. I think the $439 million geobond investment was a remarkable investment. I think it's fabulous for the community. And I do believe over the longer term, we will get returns from enhanced property values. That relates to property tax. Here's the one addition I would make to your comments. We have to show the discipline to take a piece of that and put it back in to keep those assets living. So I agree with you, it's an investment. We just need to direct some of those funds.
Okay, good. John, do you have direction? Because I will bring this up for sure in our budget discussions.
I will too. So
if you want to start thinking about what millage rate we would need to maintain all of our assets, we have a job to do. Part of it is fiscal responsibility. It may not be politically popular, but I believe in doing the right thing. I think all of us do. Okay. We're out of order now. Just want to do item number one, discussion regarding a waterless car wash RFP at garages. This has been around for a while. Nice jacket.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning. Saul Francis, Parking Department Director, for the record. So this item is a report back to this committee regarding the status of the GT Echo Car Wash. They started a pilot back in February at the 17th Street Garage. It's worked well. In fact, we had requests for additional service here at the City Hall Garage, so they provide service in March. Actually, they started service here every Friday. They're building their clientele. The city receives 8% of gross revenues. While it's not a lot of money, it's still a good amenity. It's a nice amenity we're providing to our users. And we're recommending that we extend it to additional garages and receive an endorsement to negotiate a concession agreement for that for a longer term. George Nemi from GTO Echo Car Wash is here in case there are any questions.
You like it, Saul?
Yes, it's working.
I see it here. I've never used it, but
yes.
People are using it?
Yes.
No harm?
No harm. It's a resilient.
Not a lot of money back to the city, but.
It's a resilient initiative. It's working well.
But people like it. Okay, I'm fine with it.
Good, me too.
Okay. That takes care of item number one. There was a discussion. So number five is discuss the implementation of the motion made on April 5th by the Hispanic Affairs Committee.
Yeah, I think I can help tee this up. The recommendation from the administration makes sense. This was something that came from the Hispanic Affairs, and I think the next step per the memo is marketing is going to talk to the Hispanic Affairs Committee to determine the right folks. So, Tanya, you can weigh in, but my position is that looks great. Let's proceed.
What is this?
Yeah,
I don't understand.
This was a recommendation from the Hispanic Affairs Committee to conduct two interviews that will be aired on MBTV during Hispanic Heritage Month. I don't know if you want to pick up on that, Tanya.
Correct. From the Hispanic Affairs motion, they want us to do two interviews to air during Hispanic Affairs Month and then do it every year during Hispanic Affairs Month. We can absolutely do this. Happy to move forward, and fine. No problem.
Great.
I'll move it.
That was easy. Thank you. Thanks, Tanya. We have items 10, 13, and 15. So we'll do 10, which is discussion regarding capital appropriations for the property management emergency generator. Adrian, you're back up.
We come to this group all the time. We have a project that's been funded, and the process before we go to a capital budget amendment would be moving funds from savings from previous projects. This is to get our facility down in Sunset Harbor, a permanent generator, which we don't have right now, to be able to serve the community or our city staff in the event of a storm. So that project's been designed. Generator's been ordered. There are some additional mechanical scope, structural scope that we needed to add, and this does include a contingency line item that we don't expect to use.
What's the cost of the generator?
I think we're all in. Give me a second. Sorry about that.
$95,000? No. $241,000 and an additional $95,000, so it brings you to about.
Yeah, there's a 500 kW to power the whole building under load. So it's a big generator going into that enclosure on a concrete pad.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious what a generator costs to power that, because I have generators in my buildings, and they're usually $100,000 to $150,000. So this is a much bigger generator than what I have.
We're doing a similar one at Public Works down at Dade Boulevard.
What's the useful life?
With proper maintenance, because it's an enclosure, you're looking at 15 years.
About 15 years. Yeah. That's what I got. Yeah. Okay. Great. I just want to make sure my guys at work are telling me the right.
You're good.
Okay. Thanks. Do you need a motion or something?
One thing I'd like to suggest is that at some point we were asked that when we do capital budget amendments, it'd be good if we'd gone through most of the projects that aren't time sensitive in the Finance Committee meeting. I think, Adrian, I speak for him, that this is becoming a little time consuming. I'd like to just maybe make the proposal that if there's a project that he's asking for that's renewal and replacement, where we're just moving savings from a completed project or something like that into it, that maybe this could just go straight to a capital budget amendment where it could still be reviewed by the City Commission. But these feel like routine items, and we're tying up valuable time here. So I just wanted to just
so, I mean, Commissioner Samuels is in the restroom. I would definitely support it. I'm sure he will, too, because that just makes sense. And the last thing I want you guys to be doing is administrative stuff that takes up time, but at the end of the day, it's a very obvious recommendation. So I'd wait for him to second it. But Joy, would you support?
I support it, but I can't vote.
Yeah. I think you guys will be fine.
We lose a pair of months finding that the next available committee, then finding the next available capital budget amendment that John's prepared. So essentially, we're sitting on our hands for a couple months. This could have been, moved along a little bit faster.
We'll do that. We'll wait for Commissioner Samuel and then forward with that. And then we'll do item number 13 next. Commissioner Samuel, just need your support on something I think that makes a lot of sense. John, would you want to recap? He just had a sidebar request.
Yes. So once upon a time, we had capital budget amendments. We do them fairly frequently, and most of the items are fairly routine because most of the important ones get talked about here at the Finance Committee meeting. And right now, we're casting a wide net. They're all pretty much getting discussed here at the Finance Committee meeting. We have a lot of routine, I think, no-brainers, if you will, that especially in Adrian's shop where he's just taking money savings from this project and putting it to this one, and it's tying up a couple of months in time. So I would just like to propose that we're just reallocating funding within these projects, that maybe we could just go straight to capital budget amendment and just hear it at the full commission instead of hearing it here.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, because what you'll do, you're just going to present it on a schedule to us anyway for approval. Right. So we'll still see it and approve it. But that way, every single line doesn't have to keep coming back here, tying you up half a day waiting to be called.
Right, and if there's any sensitive items, I think we would still run them through here. But these routine kind of no-brainers, if you would, I think that would help a lot.
By the way, I want to encourage staff, regardless of department, to make these kind of recommendations to us, because it pains me to see all the talent that sits in these meetings waiting to be called instead of being out in the field doing, good things. That's why I'm always looking. Yeah, that's why I'm always trying to look to get people out of here as quickly as possible. And I'll bring this up at the budget as well, as impose discipline on ourselves and encourage staff to, have enough, the courage to tell us, hey, I can be out here in 5 minutes if you call me first. Because to have you guys sitting here 3-4 hours waiting to be called for a 5-minute discussion is just not good. So, anything we can do to make your jobs better and save money, then tell us so we can do it.
Thank you.
And that was a good recommendation, John. Thank you. Good.
Thanks, John.
13, Leslie, I hope you weren't waiting around, but perfect example. It's 10 o'clock. You've been waiting around for us to discuss something that will take 2 minutes.
Good morning. Our Youth Commission, which is going into its third year of existence, has requested support to participate in the legislative action days that take place usually in Tallahassee, January, March timeframe. It's a 2-day event. We have 7 youth commissioners, each appointed by each of you. Each year we have some turnover because many of our youth commissioners do graduate and go on to university. But as you know, I'm sure many of our youth commissioners are very much involved, reaching out to you quite frequently. Some of the issues that they've tackled and received support from the commission include the youth job fair that's going very well.
Leslie, could you just, this is $5,000?
Yes.
You want to make the motion?
I'll move.
Okay, thanks. Perfect example, you know. It's small amount of money, great return on investment, sending our young leaders to Tallahassee to be, I mean, this is a really good expenditure of money. Took 2 seconds and had you here, you know, for a while. It's the kind of thing I want to try to root out. Thank you, Leslie. Last item, yours, Commissioner Samuel. This is a good one. Item 15, discussion to review the Mayor's Panel on Ocean Drive Safety, Security, and Infrastructure Subcommittees. For a secret shopper program as an investigative tool. So I have some thoughts on this as well.
So at our May 1st subcommittee meeting for Ocean Drive Safety, Security, Infrastructure, the group discussed evaluating and taking action on deceptive practices along Ocean Drive sidewalk cafes. They realized that this is a grander issue citywide, not just on Ocean Drive. And so we tried to determine the best way to evaluate and take enforcement actions on such establishments. One of the tool that we recognized as being the most sustainable was using the secret shopper program and emulating that we use for the trolleys, the parking garages, and parking lots that Leslie has worked out. So we've identified that using the secret shopper would be the best tool to use this, and that we could also use it not only for the negative things, but also for the positive, and highlight establishments that are doing the things that we see as being beneficial to our city brand. And while it does come with a cost of establishing the secret shopper program and the cost to their services, there is the grander value of dealing with these deceptive issues that hurt our city's brand.
How do you hire secret shoppers, and how are they interviewed so that they know what to do and how to be camouflaged?
We currently have excellence assessors already employed. We have 6 of them. These assessors work in an undercover capacity in some ways, and they are already out and about assessing the customer service levels that we receive from our trolley drivers, from our valet operators, from our garage attendants, and from our garage security. So we already have that in place, and we've been doing it for several years.
Good. Thank you. Except I'm not sure how successful they are as far as the garages are concerned, because they go so infrequently that I don't think they're getting a true picture of the real service of the attendants in the garages.
We actually visit each of our garages at least 45 times a quarter.
Really?
So, yes, we visit each garage 45 times a quarter. We interact with garage attendants each time we enter those garages. So we the data that we have is very useful, and we've been using it to continually improve that service. It's a little bit more challenging with the security monitors because they're not in one specific location, and so sometimes when we enter those garages, the intent is to touch them 45 times each quarter as well. Sometimes we are unable to do that. But attendant, we touch 45 times a quarter.
Okay. Per Thank garage? You.
Per garage.
And what are they looking for?
From a customer, well, we assess actually 3 things. Each time we enter a garage, we're assessing the cleanliness and the appearance of the garage, and then we are interacting with the garage attendant, and we're rating the level of customer service that they're providing. We have 10 specific criteria we're looking at. Those interactions are often done at this point because we don't have a physical garage attendant in each garage. They are done via the communication system. And it's the greeting that's received, if the question is being answered, if they are able to provide the information that's being specifically requested, if the assessor is asking for a location, can they provide that location, and so on.
And we outsource that to a firm, or we do it ourselves?
No, we're doing that internally. We have 6 part-time employees that work approximately 29 hours a week that do that, as well as doing cleanliness assessments of our public rights of way, assessing our trolleys, our restrooms, We do send out reports on a quarterly basis to the Commission on each of these performance initiatives. So each of you will be receiving the quarter three reports
That's
the latter part of July.
That's why I asked about the garage, because I read those reports, and in the garage it looked to me like there were very few actual interactions, but perhaps I missed something.
Mr. Chair,
just a question for you. Sorry. And so are we contemplating keeping this in-house, the secret shopper for Ocean Drive?
The best mechanism for enforcement purposes. And the idea is that as they're out there and there's actionable items, it would be reported to those to the respective enforcement agencies, so be it code or PD.
And how would we do this? Give them a set of criteria that we are trying to identify?
Correct. I'd work with Leslie and then the panel to identify the different sets of criteria that we know are the deceptive issues, and also just based off of our code our sidewalk cafe code. So we would look at that and make sure that they're meeting all those things as well.
Yeah, because I don't know what happened at your subcommittee, Commissioner Samulin. I don't know if it's going to come from your committee, but certainly, you know, I don't want secret shoppers opining on the quality of the food, you know.
No.
We're looking at behavior, right?
Correct.
So you're going to give them that guideline?
Exactly. Commissioner Ariola, I think we're very much on the same page. Real simple here. The goal is to improve the experience for all our customers here in Miami Beach, be they tourists or residents. We have some great operators in Miami Beach. We just have some bad apples still doing things that are unacceptable, and they're doing it on public property. That's a real problem. So I think what we're using is a tried-and-true mechanism. The city has had experience with it. Actually, good operators use mystery shoppers, secret shoppers, to monitor their own behavior. And I think the message we have here from our committee is enough, and we want to highlight the good. But if folks are doing things they shouldn't, we think this is a valuable step. It's a step on the journey. We've done other things, and there's more to come.
And this $25,000?
It's for a pilot in the MXC area, that's also including that portion of Washington Avenue that's misconstrued to be part of the MXC, but it's separate from it. But that's where we have the highest density of issues in sidewalk cafes also. So we'd like to focus it there. It's not going to be statistically valid where it's not citywide, and it's not going to be – right now it's not, but we're not requesting it for the whole year's worth of cost. But at least it's enough to get a good taste and shed some light on a lot of the issues, and it could also help improve how we strategize with our code.
Yeah, so, I mean, I love this, and I congratulate you on
it.
Thank you. I think huge potential benefit. I think the thing we have to, like, try to figure out is, you know, what is it we want to measure so that we – because I think we're trying to stop bad behavior more than anything else. And so I think that list, that criteria, and I don't, Ceci, I don't know if you have already worked this up. I don't know who's come up with the report card that the secret shopper is going to be measuring, but I think that's the essential element here.
Right. I think that we could take a look at that. We haven't really looked at the specifics of it, but certainly we advocated for it. It's something that we wanted to do as the Ocean Drive Association ourselves, but we didn't have really the resources nor the manpower to do it.
And I also think you might have a conflict of interest.
A little bit of a conflict, right. It could be a little bit, but we wanted to do it as part of membership. So it certainly was part of the plan from the beginning. We are saying that it should be not only Ocean Drive and maybe extend to Española Way and also to Lincoln Road, because those are the tourist areas. And we're finding that we have complaints from all of those three areas, not just Ocean Drive. And you'll see that Collins has very few sidewalk cafes. Washington Avenue doesn't have a lot of sidewalk cafes. So I know it's gerrymandering somewhat. It's easier to say the MXE district with Washington. But if you're really looking at the tourist corridors, I would say Ocean, Española, and Lincoln. That would be my suggestion.
First off, thank you for sharing. Thank you for your support and working with us on this. I would just look to the administration. A quick reaction on that alternative of the geography, something you want to think about?
If we're growing it to include all of those areas, it's going to be an increased amount of sidewalk cafe establishments, which increases that $25,000 cost, because it's off of 78 and 78 in that area. So that's the one thing I would say is that I agree, and it makes sense, or if you want to reallocate it so it's not Washington, Collins, CD2, and just highlight it as Ocean Drive.
Here's a thought. Mm-hmm. I like that recommendation. Why don't we go back and sort of recook the numbers based on that, But perhaps we do pilot the pilot a little. Let's start small. Mm-hmm. We'll set aside the money so you could do the whole area that you think is right. But we'll still start maybe in the smaller area just to work out the kinks. That would be my only thought. But we'll have the funding to do the entire area. That's my leaning.
Yeah, I mean, I understand your purview was the MXE district, yeah, right. Not Lincoln Road. So you weren't necessarily right. contemplating that. But we do have that same issue on Lincoln Road and Española mm-hmm. Way. But let's move forward with the MXE on okay. this. Perfect it. You'll have the report card. That's going to be the exact same procedure and report card for Española right. and for Lincoln Road. So I'd be inclined we can even bring back next finance to look what that additional. Okay. Why don't we do that? Let's approve this for the MXE. Staff come back. What would it cost to include Española Way and Lincoln Road? Okay. And we'll bring that good. Back to finance. And
wonderful.
Did you also like me to bring the report card to the next to your subcommittee at least? To review?
Yeah, no, okay. I think we trust the administration. I personally happen to be a sounding board. You could also, Amy, bring it back to the Mayor's Ocean Panel mm-hmm. Committee, which did it. We welcome input from the businesses, the good business operators there. I think we can make this happen. I think this could really have a positive effect.
Great. Let me ask, too, because so what is going to be the purpose of the Secret Shopper report card? And I'll be specific. Are we going to then use that to inform the city manager on whether he should renew or revoke sidewalk permits? Is that going to go into a report card that the ODA puts out for compliance purposes? So, like, what are we going to use this data for? Because there's going to be a purpose for it.
It's precisely for, well, first, if it's actionable intel that we are receiving from the secret shoppers and code compliance goes out and does cite them for sidewalk cafe violations, those violations do stack up against their future sidewalk cafe application and even for that one standing one. So it can be revoked or the future application could be denied by the city manager. We'd be able to have more streamlined information to do that now versus what we're doing currently. And then also it would give the general landscape that lets the manager have a full view of it. So if it's not enough for the violation, he could still review it as part of it.
So long as we're now designing, we're in the design phase now, and we're approving the budget, let's loop in legal, Raul and your team, because whatever we're going to do, I want it to have teeth and actually work. Right. And to be fair to the operators, so if we have secret shoppers and it's going to mm-hmm. it's going to be mm-hmm. there's going to be a repercussion if we find you to be in violation of certain behaviors we're expecting, what is that criteria that will inform the city manager? Is it three strikes and you're out? Is it two strikes and you're out? Make sure legally we've defined it so that they can't protest and appeal. So, let's work with legal, the ODA, communications, and then get this report. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I definitely agree we should we would encourage the administration to work closely with the city attorney's office. I would say two things. One, what the secret shoppers are able to do is identify where there's a problem and what the problem is. That's really, and we will be able to take action. Interestingly, and maybe the city attorney would help underline this point and can give me the detail, but the city manager has broad discretion when there are violations of our sidewalk cafe permit. There's some stringent actions that he can take, including revoking sidewalk cafe permits. So I think we have a lot of tools in our tool basket, and what this tool will do is allow us to pinpoint the problem, and then we are expecting action.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that some of these things are not easy to appeal. So meaning mm-hmm. a report lands on Jimmy's desk, secret shoppers have surveyed a particular restaurant, found five violations. We want to make sure that it's ironclad, that report card sure. checks all the boxes mm-hmm. so that if they protest, it's very clear and fair. You know what I'm saying?
We would.
That is not ambiguous or gray.
No. We would also say the methodology is important too, right? Like comprehensive, not random sample, because then you're going to have somebody come in and appeal it, saying nobody else on the street was picked, or there were only five people on the street that were reviewed. So the methodology, I think, also needs to be really ironclad.
Absolutely. And we would welcome the business community input into that process. So I would encourage the administration to meet with SESI, other good operators in Ocean Drive, because they know they do this. So they know how to do this on Ocean Drive as well.
We do it. We do it. Leslie does a great job with all the city services for years she has, but we have the hospitality end of it. So we can, you know, we do have secret shoppers that come in all the time, and has really helped our businesses as far as like where there's going to be deficiencies, where there's poor performance, where there's theft, either by employees or not. So it really is very helpful. And on the hospitality end, we'll be happy to help.
Yeah. Let me ask, I mean, Raul, if you have a thought, or staff, is that, you know, should we be doing this in-house, or are we better off actually going outside third party, just to have that sort of independent layer?
So I do want to, the reason why we're doing it in-house is so that when it goes to, when they're doing the reporting, it would go to be referred to our in-house staff, code compliance, or PD, and they would be able to do their own independent investigation based off of those results. So it would trigger their investigation, wouldn't be automatically a violation. So it's some separation. So their findings get reported to the respective departments, and the respective departments go out and investigate it. If it's, I would leave it to legal to let me know if I could use a private resource for that. But the original thought was that we were just trying to stay away from using social media, trying to stay away from the Yelp reviews. That was the avenue we were trying to do. And we just, instead of recreating a new wheel, we wanted to work off of something that was already existing. But if there is an opportunity to outsource it and obtain the same goal, where it's actionable items for code and PD to investigate and then do their own violations for, we'd be receptive to that.
No, my thoughts are we want to get it done, and I would look to the administration to work with the city attorney. I'm comfortable with the recommendation of doing it in-house. If, after review, outsourcing to a third party is a better solution, mm-hmm. I'd be open to that. But I think we're dictating the what here, Commissioner, and I think we can be comfortable that they'll get the how right.
I think there's another factor. If you outsource it, it's going to be a lot more money.
Yeah, I know.
You're going to need a lot more funding because that's a company that does it. I've seen it. I've managed it. I do think that the city is capable of handling it internally. We'd be happy to help. But
Now, these are folks that are going to have to pretend to be customers, sit in a restaurant and order food and eat. So we're going to have to buy them gym memberships to work off all this food.
All the walking around the city. Yep. Mm-hmm. Go through 65.
All righty. I think that's it, right?
So covered everything? Done by acclamation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. We'll support it. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That concludes our meeting. Thank you for all being here. Enjoy the rest of your day and weekend.
Good meeting, sir.
Thank you.
That fiscal house in order. Yeah.